Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. I hope that everyone's having a fabulous Monday so far and that this is an extra bonus to your Monday morning or Monday afternoon. And today on the podcast, I'm really excited to be joined by Danielle Joseph. Danielle is based out of Toronto, Canada. And Danielle and I connected through Laura Fraser, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And Danielle is up to some amazing stuff. She is a graphic designer. She's a yoga teacher. And on top of her graphic design business, she has sort of a separate business within that that is your yoga brand. So she's branded her graphic design business as sort of two different entities. And so one of them, she actually works with yoga teachers specifically doing yoga branding. And so that's the topic of today's episode. We're talking about a ton of different stuff having to do with yoga branding. Despite having a marketing degree, I learned so much from Danielle. She's really, really, really full of knowledge. She's super skilled with what she does. And she runs an online Facebook community. So she mentions that in the episode. There'll also be a link on the show notes. So if you've been looking to improve your yoga brand or start your yoga brand or change your yoga brand, definitely, definitely check that out. And so without further ado, here's Danielle. So I've got Danielle with me here today, and she's joining me from Toronto. That's right?
That's right, yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm really excited to be talking about branding with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited, and I'm cozied up here in Toronto because it's cold, but I'm ready.
Yeah, it is like pretty chilly over there this time of year, but it's a good thing that you've got a blanket, maybe a cup of tea.
I do.
Nice. Tea is life. I was wondering if you could start by just telling me briefly how you first got into yoga.
Yeah. My very first kind of interaction with yoga and diving into like, what is this thing was in university. And, it was just like, you know, typical university time. And I was really stressed out. I had like three jobs, and I was also going to school with a full course load. And then the like crazy relationships things that happen during university. And I just felt like, okay, I need something that I can do that's like not very, something that I can do like in my apartment, really, because that's how I started. And I had this small little student house, and my roommate actually kind of gave me a book as a gift that was like it was called The Gift of Yoga. And it was a book that kind of got you started on what yoga was all about and some poses. And I actually started doing it right in like my living or my bedroom of my student house on the floor. I didn't even have a yoga mat yet. And I just started doing YouTube videos. I looked up some classes, and I sort of just started to explore what it was. And from there I joined a studio, and I was able to kind of take classes more regularly and with a teacher. And I fell in love with all of it. And it was something I kept coming back to. And then eventually I decided, you know what, when I first made the decision to actually take a teacher training, I was making that decision to kind of just explore a little bit deeper. I didn't feel like there was any other option really for me to, I wanted to learn more about why I kept coming back to this, like why I loved this so much, like what was happening and what is this about. And that was why I initially signed up for a teacher training. It wasn't kind of necessarily intentional to teach yoga, but about halfway through my course, the course that I took had an option of either you could do like up to a certain point, and that was just called a foundations course into yoga. And then if you continued on, that was where the teacher part came in. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep going. Like, why wouldn't I? I love it. I want to share it. And so I kept going. And yeah, that was sort of like at the end of it, I was like, how can I not share this now with other people? So I decided to take on kind of that role of yoga teacher.
Oh, that's amazing. And so you've been teaching ever since then?
Ever since then, yeah, I've been teaching. I started teaching right kind of before I graduated my teacher training, because the place I was working at the time approached me, and they knew I was kind of doing doing my teacher training, and they were like, can you lead some classes, like just really simple classes at lunch? And I was like really nervous. And I was like, you know what? I'm not a yoga teacher yet. I'm not certified yet. I haven't finished. They're like, we know. And, I think like I did it for like $2, I think, a class, which is funny because it was like one of those things where they didn't want to do it just for free, just for a couple of rounds while I like got some experience, and then they wanted to pay me, but it was a funny amount that we settled on. But, but yeah, I started kind of teaching before I was finished, and yeah, I've been teaching since.
That's amazing. What a great way to just like dive into it and not have to have that sort of like, I guess you've had fear regardless when you start teaching, but I feel like there's a lot of pressure sometimes when you graduate with this teacher training and you want to start teaching. You're like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, completely. I was so thankful for the opportunity just to be like thrown into it, because that teaching gig with teaching my coworkers was like what built my confidence. And I'm not sure like how I would feel going into a class of people I didn't know. And this, like, I think it was a lot less overwhelming than it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I actually taught my first class at a Lululemon staff meeting when I worked at Lululemon. And so it was really cool to have all these people that I worked with every day who knew that I'd gone like to Bali to do my teacher training. And it made it so much less intimidating to be like, okay, now give me feedback, because everyone was so stoked for me.
Yeah. And it's also like, I felt like I could be a lot more transparent with those people because they knew me already. And I could be like, you know, I'm new to this and I may stumble my words and I may, you know, like just bear with me while we go through this together. And they were just all really, really supportive because they knew where I was at. So it was really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, so you went to school for design and branding, is that right?
It is. Yeah. I did a lot of school, but it was mainly like my schooling, my education was primarily in university in like marketing and education and communications. I'll spare you reading out my degree title because it's like a minute long. But I did kind of the basis of that, and I did a specialization in digital media while I was there. And then from there, I was like, you know what, this graphic design thing, like I started kind of freelance, and I needed the technical skills. So I went back to college for 2 years and did a graphic design certificate.
Cool. That's awesome. And then at what point did you combine like branding with yoga?
Yeah. So this is kind of an interesting story, and it happened, like, I don't want to sound like so cliche, but it really happened kind of organically and naturally. And I don't even remember making, like a choice about if I was going to do that, but I finished my teacher training, and because I had already had a business running for my freelance, for my design company, a lot of the fellow kind of the students at my teacher training, the people that I did the program with, they knew that I knew how to at least set up a business and get started in the business world. And they knew I had that background. And, I had a few people coming to me just like, you know, almost like, oh my gosh, like what are we supposed to do now? You know, we're finishing our teacher training. I feel like I can maybe stand up in front of a class and teach, but like, do I need a website? How am I a legitimate business? Like what is that even like? They were just a bit lost. And I, you know, my solution to that, or like after a few people had asked me for a little bit of guidance, I put together a workshop here in Toronto for yoga teachers specifically to help them build a business and build a brand. So it was, you know, it was called Building Your Brand, for yoga teachers. And it was an in-person event where it was 2 days that we went through, and we just went through like the basics of how to set up a business, how to start thinking about your brand, what you need to do to build your own website to get started, that kind of stuff. So we did that here, and then I got a lot of good feedback from that. And from there, it was just kind of a matter of like, this needs to be accessible to other teachers, because I had other teachers asking, and putting on live workshops is awesome. It was such a good experience, but it's not like it's not something you can do in, what am I trying, like, you can't reach a ton of people, and you can only put them on so often. Like, you're one person trying to put on a workshop. So, I started to build out an online course basically that had that content in an online form, and you know, built a curriculum and put together the content and started to do that. And with that came a Facebook group of yoga teachers, which is now almost at, I think, 560 yoga teachers. And it just kind of grew, and this ability to support teachers in that area, in, you know, building a brand, building a website, building a business, what does that mean for yoga teachers? The ability to combine my two worlds was just kind of naturally formed that way.
Yeah, that's so awesome to hear, like, that you were able to take, you know, what you were doing sort of in this, like, I guess, like, freelance sort of corporate world, and then take your passion for yoga and really combine the two into one thing that's, like, very useful for yoga teachers.
Yeah, and it's something, too, that I find even now still to this day, like, is very different from a different kind of client that I could work with in a design company. Like, yoga teachers are really, it's, like, really personal. It's really, it's like a spiritual practice for people, and it's something that's it's just treated a bit differently than how I treat kind of a client project on the other side to support yoga teachers. So it's been interesting to see the differences.
Yeah. Yeah. Yoga is kind of like this interesting thing. Like, the business of yoga is quite different from, like, other businesses, like other business sides of other industries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is different. And it's so deeply personal, because, like, we are our brand, we are the face of our business. Like, it's us. Like, it's just like, it's our personality. It's how we teach yoga. It's our little quirks. It's like, it's all of those things. Whereas sometimes when you're building a business outside of yourself, it's like this other entity, and it's a bit more separate.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are some of the, like, key tips that you give to yoga teachers when you, like, sit down with a client, or when you run a workshop, when it comes to them, like, setting up their brand?
I always, for yoga teachers specifically, like, what comes up often is just to be, like, start simple, because a lot of the times I work with two different types of people, typically in like, both sides of my business. The two different kinds of clients that I usually will see is someone who's just starting out, like, new, building a business, and isn't quite sure where to step and how to set up, like, a brand, and what do they need, and what about a logo and a website. So there's the people who are just starting, and then there's the people who have been in business for a little while. They might have now started generating, like, more revenue, and they want to invest in really kind of leveling up their brand and figuring out what this all means now, and doing things to kind of, quote unquote, like, properly. And I think, like, the best tips I give yoga teachers who are coming to me who are just starting is to just start simply. And the thing about a brand is that, yes, it's, you know, your logo, and yes, it's your website, and yes, it's the colors that you pick to communicate with, and it's all of those things, but it's just, like, it's such a big picture, and it's so much about who you are as a teacher, what your style is, the language that you use, you know, how you open and close your classes, and how you sign off on an email. Like, it's all these little tiny things that all are kind of woven together to be this bigger picture of what, how you kind of, you interact with your students and how you make them feel. So it, like, the best advice that I give when people are starting out with, like, logos and websites and stuff is just to start, you know, keep things, don't overcomplicate things for yourself. Especially right at the beginning, and give yourself kind of the room to evolve and grow and continue to kind of seek out these changes that are going to happen inevitably in your business and your brand. Like, we're kind of bitten by the yoga teacher training bugs at that point. And there's, like, I still don't even know what path necessarily I will be going, like, for yoga teaching. Like, I really want to do a prenatal class this, like, course this year, but does that mean, like, I'm going to love it? I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, take my, like, niche down and towards a certain direction. So it's just, I think if you start kind of big picture, start simple, and really pay attention and be reassessing what's working and what's not, what you love doing and what you don't love doing. And yeah, give yourself room to kind of explore and grow.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I love the idea of, like, starting simple. I think that sometimes you can look at, like, building a brand, if you've never done it before, it can be really overwhelming. Like, there's so many forms of social media, like, website stuff is not intuitive. Maybe if you've never done it, it's like, how do I get a logo? And I think sometimes it's easy to look at all of that and feel so overwhelmed that you're just like, no, I'm shutting the computer down. Like, I'm just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming. And, like, there's so many technical skills behind all of that too, like building a proper logo and building a website. And it can be completely overwhelming. And I always say this to kind of, like, my audience, in that when you are building a brand or you're building yourself a business, you're always investing in some form. You're always investing either energy or time or money. And it's sort of a matter of picking and choosing what you want to be investing. So if you don't have the energy to be, like, learning something completely new, like building a website or a website platform, if you don't have the energy to give to that, then you need to give into the other ways, either through time or you need to invest your money to get someone to outsource that and get someone who does already know what they're doing to do it for you. If you don't have the money, you can invest your time and your energy to learn and maybe feel those little bits of overwhelm that will creep in. So it's kind of like you choose like where you're putting your energy and your investment. And, it can be overwhelming. It can be a lot to take in, and it can be like this big checklist of things that you feel like you have to work through in order to be like a legitimate business owner or entrepreneur.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much different stuff that you can do, and I can see like how somebody who's never done it before could just look at it all and be like, no, I'm just not going to partake in this. This just
close
seems like
the computer.
Too much. Yeah. Like walking away. And, yeah, I definitely understand that for sure. I feel like I've had moments of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot.
And then, so for people who maybe have their business already, maybe they've been doing it for a couple years and just need like a change with something in their business, what sort of stuff do you recommend in terms of branding for those people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is actually kind of where I'm at. And I think I've worked actually with a couple of yoga teachers this year that have been in that boat where they've been in business, they've been teaching for a while. They have the teaching stuff all figured out. They've got like that. They know who they're speaking to. They know who they like working with. They know kind of the audience that they appeal to, and they know what workshops they like teaching, all of these things. So they, once you've kind of got some time under your belt, I think, to look back on things, you start to be able to see those little bits and pieces of your business that you really love doing and that you can like lose yourself in time doing. And then you see those bits that are like, I am dreading that, or, you know, and I'm at a point in my businesses right now where I'm doing a lot of reflection. It's also kind of like right now we're coming into and wrapping up 2016. And, it's that kind of brings in a lot of reflection and planning, but it's about now it's my time to kind of streamline and be like, okay, I've tried all of these different things in this past couple of years, and I really don't like doing this, or I really don't like teaching this, or, you know, I actually really love when I can go teach at a workplace and bring, you know, a little piece of joy these workers' days. Like, you know, in Toronto, here I am, and there's lots of corporate, you know, offices downtown, and that's what I love doing. Or, you know, there's different things and ways of evaluating of what you like. And the good thing about being an entrepreneur, being a yoga teacher, owning your own kind of business, is that you're in the driver's seat. You get to make those decisions. And I think when you have like a bigger picture about your brand and you've got a bigger goal and you can start to get really clear about who you are as a teacher and what that brand it really is, then it opens up the space, and it kind of makes saying no to things that aren't serving you a little easier. Cause you're like, you know what, there is this fear around, you know, I have to say yes to everything. And, but when you can say no to things that aren't really lighting you up or aren't serving your brand and your business, then you're making room and space to grow. So once you're kind of like, well, or a little bit more into the experience of being a yoga teacher, and you've got the tools and the ability to look back on things and figure out what that looks like for you, then that's typically when I see people come back to me or come to me and say, you know what, like, I'm ready to level this up, and this is what I'm about. This is what I love doing. This is what I want my business to be. These are the offerings that I want to focus on. And can you help me kind of shape that into a visual system? And that's where I can come in and take all of that information and really kind of get something out there that's going to help you communicate what you're all about to your audience in like a visual way. So through things like your logo, your color palette, your website, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a like great piece of advice. I think that it's like, again, it can be really overwhelming. So if you've gone through this like first stage of overwhelmingness and you've kind of like developed a website and developed a logo, and then you do your thing for a couple years, and then I feel like we kind of all come to this point where it's like you go on your website one day and you're like, I am just not stoked about this anymore. Like, it does not make me feel alive. And I think it's cool to just kind of like go with that, like kind of trust your instincts. If you're like, okay, I'm not feeling this, I feel blah about it, so I should communicate something that makes me feel more excited and alive.
Yeah. And there's so many ways, you know, as a designer, I work with so many different types of clients, and there's just like, there's so many ways to capture an audience or to capture a feeling or a vibe that you want to be about, or through visuals. And yeah, like if you're landing on your website, once you're, particularly once you're into that, like once you're, you have the experience under your belt and you're just like, you land on your website and it's just, it's not speaking your language. It's not working to kind of get across what you want to be about. And that's when it's maybe time to like check in and, you know, assess the visual system that you have in place for your business. And the way that we communicate, the way that we communicate with our brands and our businesses, we have so many channels of communication now, and it's great, but this is like the most important time nowadays, and every day that we go forward and there's some new platform or some new way to reach an audience, these are the date, like this is where consistency is just so key. And you want, you know, you want your audience to feel what you're about, and they're not going to feel necessarily what you're about in an instant of looking at your logo. Like your logo or a particular, like it all has to work together as different kind of pieces of a puzzle to communicate that bigger message and that purpose and the values and what you're about. Like it all works together to do that. So consistency and having a visual system in place for your brand and your business and how you communicate is pretty crucial. I think these days in particular, where we're seeing people on so many different platforms.
Yeah, I think that you touched on something really important there, where it's like, you need to be consistent across all your platforms to really communicate your brand as like a whole. And I know that's something that I kind of struggled with as I, you know, I became a yoga teacher, and all of a sudden it's like the things I started posting were different because I was different. And then it's like, you know, maybe starting a new Instagram account for like a different aspect of business and kind of figuring out how to separate like who I am personally from the professional side of myself, but then to also keep my personal brand in line with the things that I'm doing as a business, if that makes sense.
Yeah, completely. And that's what I hear a lot too, is like, that's another kind of symptom of that yoga teachers are their business. Like when it comes to media, like different things that we can manage, it's a question of, is this separate from me? Is this a separate, like, do I set up another yoga account or do I keep it on my personal account? And it's all kind of in that growth and that evolution of your brand. Like if you decide to separate it out, that's amazing. And then you're still going to see changes though, as you go through your teaching career, and the things you post might change, what you offer might change. You know, you might start off teaching students in a studio, and then now you're hosting retreats, and then eventually you're doing your own teacher training. So your audience is shifting and growing with you as well. So yeah, leaving kind of room in your, even if it's just in the back of your mind, to be like, it's okay for my brand to evolve and change as I do, then I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to get caught up in the idea that, you know, you've like put a certain thing out there and like your people expect that certain thing. And then I don't know, for me, I feel like it's almost like maybe fear, like, oh, if I start doing something different from what people are liking now, maybe they'll stop like liking my stuff, or maybe they'll unfollow me, which is not really the right way to think about it. Because if you're putting something out there, you might just attract different people, just like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I hear this sometimes in like the online space and stuff. And it's something I have to remind myself of too, is that if you put something out there, your Facebook post or an email to your email list, and you get unsubscribers or unfollowers, then like they're not the people that are going to be like really itching to come to your classes anyways, and like seeking, like it's okay to let them go, to leave room for people who actually are like into what you're providing and want to be, you know, want to be at your workshops, want to be at your retreats, want to be at your classes. It's okay to leave room for them to step up and let the people who aren't resonating with you, like, that's kind of shouldn't be skin off of our back. I know we kind of have that personal skin in the game, and we are, like I said, we are a brand. So we take it a bit more like it's personal. It feels personal, but it just really isn't. It's just about the right kind of people and your ideal kind of students being in your audience and finding your kind of community, finding the people, the students who just really want to be learning from you.
Yeah, I think that it's easy to like just get attached to numbers sometimes, especially with social media or mail, like mail lists. Like I know that like I've had people unsubscribe from my mailing list and I'm like, oh, did they like not like my last email? And then I remind myself that like I unsubscribe from mailing lists all the time. And it's usually not because I feel anything negative towards that person. It's maybe because I got too many emails or I'm not reading them or it's not what I expected or like I already got what I wanted out of it. And it's never because I don't like that person or their brand. It's just like it's not serving me.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just unsubscribe from things to create more of that breathing space and that like less inbox. And yeah, the number game is just something it's so interesting. And if you think about it, like if you have 10 people who are constantly engaged and constantly seeking you out and asking you when your workshops are and coming to your classes, and you've got 10 people that are that eager to be learning from you, then you, that's what I would choose over like 1,000 people who, you know, barely hear from, barely open an email, barely, you know, like it's just not relevant. It's not it's not more powerful to have more numbers if they're less engaged. So, yeah, I'd rather pick the 10 people who are super, like interested in what I have to say and what I'm teaching.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point because it's like those people who are actually engaging with your stuff kind of become like they move through your sales funnel. So it's like you've got all those people that are kind of just there. And then the ones who actually like lock on and become really excited about the stuff that you're putting out there, whether or not it's like products or courses or content or podcasts or just teaching yoga, it's like those are the people who are gonna buy when you put something out there, like if you put out your retreat or your workshop or you know whatever it is.
And exactly, and when people like that are super excited about what you're doing, those are the people too that are telling their friends that they're so excited about what you're doing, instead of the people who like got an email and didn't open it. Like they're not telling their friends about how amazing, you know, something is that they need to check out. So it's like the power is really more in nurturing and building relationships with people more, a bit more like deeply than just, you know, just trying to collect followers.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to somebody who's in like the travel industry, because my boyfriend and I also like host a travel podcast, and it's interesting being in these two like different, very different spaces, but they're still very similar in terms of social media. A lot of like liking and unliking on, or following and unfollowing on Instagram or Facebook. And like he was like, oh, like this girl has 90,000 followers. Like I hate her a little bit. And I was like, like what? 90,000 followers? And this guy has like 27,000 followers. I was like, we have like 300 followers. Like,
yeah, I know.
I lose zero sleep over it.
it becomes this like game. I really can't stand that etiquette on Instagram right now where it's like follow, unfollow, follow, unfollow. Like I don't understand the strategy behind that. I don't understand how that's like something that works for people, but yeah.
Yeah, the auto commenting as well, because you can definitely tell when it's an auto comment. Like, nice. Yeah. Great profile.
I'll post like the fun, like the most random picture, and yeah, you'll get a comment that's like, amazing shot. And you're like, really? It's not, it's really not. Like, this was like my throwaway day.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So for anyone who's listening, that's not a good strategy to build your following.
No, don't do it.
Yeah, and like buying followers as well is something that I just have not understood, just to make yourself look good. I feel like that's not good for your brand at all.
Yeah, and that's like for my Instagram account, I've been focusing on my Instagram account, but the thing is I will never do any kind of like buying followers. I don't inauthentically go on and start liking and commenting or following people just for the, like any growth that I have on Instagram, I want it to be people who actually want to be following me. So I'll take my less number, you know, I'll take my small number or whatever of followers, if that means that they're actually eager to see what I'm posting.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. Do you have some tips for people who are maybe listening and are like, oh, I don't know how to organically like increase my following on social media?
So first of all, I'll come back to that kind of like consistency of branding. And like the thing about social media and finding consistency across all the platforms, what I mean by that is, you know, when you're communicating to your audience as a yoga teacher, as a business owner, it's really important that people know and can easily make the connection between what they see on Facebook, what they see on Instagram, Twitter, all of these different platforms. So one thing, just for consistency's sake, before I dive into kind of growing your following, is like profile pictures. Like, keep them similar or consistent if you can. Like, username handle, like the handles, the usernames. Like, if you can find consistency in that. I have been, like, I know people love Canva.com right now for creating graphics, but any graphics that you create for your business, try and have some element of consistency, whether it's color, through filters, through imagery, like what's in your images, your fonts, like that kind of thing. So that as people are kind of mindlessly scrolling, as we all do on their news feeds, we're not always paying attention to who's posting, but sometimes you can just tell, like when I can go through my newsfeed and I know who's posting it without looking at necessarily the name or clicking on their profile. That means they have an element of consistency that now they're in my mind. They're like pinging up in my mind and it's consistent and I'm noticing it and I'm going to remember it. And, you know, I can recognize it in a bunch of different pictures. So that kind of visual communication is really powerful in social media. So if you can start to create some consistency through that, that's a really good way to just start getting people to just notice and pick up on things. And even if it's not super conscious, it is there. Like when I'm scrolling and I see something, I'm thinking of someone who's posted that because I can tell that they're the ones that, you know, that they've posted that, if their brand color is there or their fonts are there or their logo's there or whatever. And then to grow your account, like, number one, patience is key if you do want to do it in an organic way. It takes time. And I do a report every month on what my following is and what changes have happened. So if I've grown, how much percent have I grown, that kind of thing. And that's only for me to see that there is progress being made. And even if it's at a slower pace, like I said, I'm not one that's going to, I'm not going to run a campaign on my Facebook and pay for just to get likes on my page. Like, that's not a valuable return on investment for me. So just be patient, be consistent. So consistently posting, it makes a big difference. I know it's a lot to manage, but if you can consistently keep up with your channels, and this is another piece of advice I give any business owner that asks me about social media, is that don't try and take on everything consistently. Focus on where your audience is, figure out where your audience is, and then put some energy and effort between like two maybe channels of social media. Right now for me, it's, I've got three, but I'll tell a little kind of tidbit of advice to you at the end of this, but I focus mainly on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest. And Facebook even I would say is like third place, but those are like, focus your energy. Don't worry about taking on everything. And then on those ones that you choose, be consistent. And if you are going to be on Instagram and things like that, and you're using hashtags, be intentional with those. Try and look up to see what your community or what your audience is looking at, like try and listen to what they're speaking to, and then cater your content that way. And then my other little kind of thing is that I've got some social media help. I use Meet Edgar, which is a social media scheduler. And I also use something which helps me kind of, I still am putting my content in. I'm still customizing that content and choosing and placing and scheduling that, but it keeps it on a loop, like an auto post schedule, so that I don't necessarily have to be remembering to post or pin every day.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, just to be able to like make sure that your stuff is going out consistently. I know that that's like one of the things that I've struggled the most with running like multiple social media accounts, is it's like, oh shoot, when's the last time I posted on this? And like most of the time it's organic, it's going to happen, it's something that I'm excited to post, but there's just those moments where it's like, I just don't feel like going on there right now. And it's so nice to have tools that can allow you to just do that sort of automatically.
Yeah. Like my Twitter account, for example, like it gets like, I still go on Twitter and I'm interacting and I'm answering and responding and I'm there, but I also have it so that my Twitter account basically is fed some of my other posts. So if I post on Instagram, it goes automatically onto my Twitter account. That's through a tool called IFTTT.com, if this then that.com, but it's the the letters. And that sets up like recipes that are called to, you know, if you pay Instagram, it'll feed your Twitter or vice versa. And I use that kind of sparingly because I think like if people are following me on all of my social everywhere, I try and kind of customize the content I'm sharing to the channel and things like that. But yeah, it's social media is such a beast. It's like a full-time job in and of itself.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's like so complicated and there's like different algorithms for each type of social mm-hmm. media, which makes it really hard to just like post one thing everywhere. I've used IFTTT mm-hmm. before and it's super great. Like it's awesome for getting things to a couple different places or just allowing you to schedule.
Mm-hmm. And there's other cool recipes you can set up too. Like if your calendar has this in it, then send this to, like, you can schedule your social media basically. And it's got really interesting like integrations and it's pretty complicated like in what they've done, but they've made it really easy for people to like link up accounts and do certain things. Like you can even get if someone does this on a social media account, text my phone or something like that.
I think I've heard too that if you have like Apple, like all Apple products in your house, it can link up between like your phone and your Apple Watch and your Apple TV or something like that. Like it's really crazy.
Yeah, they get really like intricate. Yeah, they're called recipes and they're just like, yeah, you can automate like things. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious what your involvement with Pinterest is, because that was something that I was actually at a travel bloggers conference and they were talking about how Pinterest is like the next thing to kind of get people actually to your website reading your content.
Yeah. Pinterest in the past year has been probably the number one source of traffic on my design website. I don't use it a ton for, I mean, I think there definitely is a yoga audience on Pinterest. And I think like if you're someone who blogs a lot, as a yoga teacher, or if you're someone who, has like online products or online content, like it's a huge source of driving traffic. And, basically like, I don't know how I literally only started paying attention to Pinterest, I think probably like in the last year, because I realized like I used to use it all the time, just like personally, be like a recipes that I, you know, I should cook this. And like, I used it for a place to store things and like pin, you know, keep like a little board of inspiration or whatever for my design stuff. And I realized one day when I went on, I was like, oh my gosh, I have like 1800 followers on Pinterest. And so I was like, I should pay attention to this. Like, obviously this is something that, that can be powerful. And I just started getting into using it as a tool for my website growth. And it's been a huge source of, you know, people on my email list and things like that. And basically anytime I have a blog post, the vertical sort of like infographic style graphics, like instead of just a small image, like obviously the vertical ones, they perform a lot better on Pinterest. And I've just had these little tips and tricks I've been reading up on things, about setting up, you know, rich pins on your website, which is an article if you just type in like rich pins and tutorials, but basically you can like verify your website and stuff through Pinterest and it helps you get seen. And it's been something that has been a really big focus because I've realized the power of, it's basically a search engine. Like it's like its own little Google and it works the same way as like with like SEO and like search engine optimization. And if you have certain keywords and like it's just this intricate world on Pinterest that I didn't really know about before this year. And, since I focused on it and I use a tool called Board Booster, like I said, it's my, like, I think I almost have like 3,000 followers now and it's crazy. Like, it's just like driving people to my blogs and my posts. And it's really awesome though. And there's so much online right now about how to optimize that.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear. It seems like it's kind of like really, really grown in terms of a tool for businesses over the last couple of years. Like I remember hearing about it as like a source for business and I was like, isn't this like what I just do when I'm feeling bored and I need like a new recipe or a new workout or I feel like online shopping without actually spending money?
Yeah, no, I that's what I used it for basically before. And then I realized kind of the power behind it and what is going into it. And the more you can understand about how it works and how to like optimize your imagery and how to place images in your blogs to be like pinnable, it is a really powerful tool, I think, if you can start to kind of learn the ins and outs.
Yeah, for sure. Something else that I'm curious about is if you have, I think, because your business is kind of like this, where you've got two different sort of businesses, but your branding is pretty similar for them. Can you talk a little bit about people having like multiple aspects of their business?
Yeah. And this happens a lot in the yoga world with yoga teachers, because a lot of the teachers that I've worked with in the past and in my community on Facebook, are yoga teachers and some massage therapists, or they're yoga teachers and they're also nutritionists. Or like even myself, like I'm a yoga teacher and a graphic designer. So there's like, there's lots of people that I think have like multi-passionate job or businesses that they've created for themselves. And I think like the key there is to, the way that I approach it through a branding perspective is, my yoga teacher stuff did used to live on my design website, and I ultimately separated it out just so that there was no confusion in, because I work still with so many different clients in my design business, I didn't want any confusion, and I wanted to have a specific place for yoga teachers to go for resources and things like that. So I did separate them out into two websites, and I kept the branding really similar. So I like my logo for my, it's youryogabrand.com. That logo is, very similar to my Function Creative, my design company logo. And it actually says hosted by Function Creative Co, because I still want that yoga teacher community to link me back to, the expertise I would have in my branding and design company. So it's, there is a lot of overlap. When it came to social media accounts, I could not bear the idea of trying to take on a whole other set of social media for my yoga world. So it basically just has kind of evolved into this. I share my yoga stuff through my Facebook group primarily. So instead of setting up a whole bunch of different social media accounts, my yoga teacher community knows that they can find me in the Facebook group I created specifically for them. And I find that to be a little bit more intimate than like a Facebook page. And so they know that that's where I can provide support the best way. And that's where I share my resources and things like that. And then my, you know, the design company side of it, they know that I'm also a yoga teacher. Like I'm very clear about that in my brand and things like that through them. And so they will see from time to time, like content around that. And I've found actually that I was really nervous about how to manage the two, but I've actually found that by having this other dimension of my business for my design company, people are a little bit more like interested in, even though they're not yoga teachers or yoga students, or they don't practice yoga, like they're more, they're like, oh, that's interesting. And, it's like created this like personality to my brand, I think, that people have resonated with in a way that I'm surprised and happy about, because I was nervous, like I said, about combining. But yeah, it's actually worked out really well, where it's also naturally kind of people in the wellness industry are a little bit more gravitated towards me as a designer now as well. And it's just added this element of personality, I think, to Function, to my design company. And then when it comes to like my resources and things that I would share, they go through my yoga website or my design website. And I also really like guest posting. Like if I have a really like a topic I want to blog about, and it's specific to yoga teachers in the yoga industry, I think guest blogging is such a good, like finding a place where someone wants to take that content and publish it for you with like, you know, your name on it. I found that that's a good way for me to express kind of the things that I would want to be blogging about for yoga teachers, because I don't have a blog specifically for them. But the Facebook group has been really powerful. I think that's like the best scenario that I could have had happen, is that this is the one channel, the one platform that you can find me on if you're a yoga teacher needing that kind of support.
Yeah, it sounds like you've done a really good job of like very clearly defining like the intentions behind each of your platforms and your website, which is probably like the key to being successful with that. Would you say?
Yeah, definitely. And it was a process. Like it was something I was like at the beginning, like I said, it all lived on the Function Creative website. And I was like, you know, I don't feel like this is working very well, because I want to be sharing more. There's more to this that I need to be showcasing or sharing with my yoga teacher audience. And it was again like an evolution of my brand that I separated them out. And then the other really great way I've seen this done, and that I have suggested for people who have different passions, is that brand yourself as you, like build your brand and your business as you, and then have different stems of offerings. So like you're the tree trunk and your offerings are different, but they're all the branches of that. And like focus on who you are as a brand, and then whether people, you know, land on your website. It's one website, maybe. Unfortunately, my name is also an author's name, so I can't have DanielleJoseph.com. But if you can have something like that, or if you can have some other iteration of that, where people are landing on your website, and you've got to work with me to an offerings or services tab, that's where it's either like yoga teacher, this or that, or different packages that you have, or they land on that and you've got kind of like a choose your own adventure style website. I've seen that done really well, where it's like, you know, say that you were going to DanielleJoseph.com and you can choose, you know, do you want the designer Danielle or do you want the yoga teacher Danielle? And there's two different kind of portals to your websites. So I've seen it done creatively in many different ways, but I think just like, again, starting simple and letting yourself evolve and feel what works and feel what doesn't, which is kind of what I did, is really important.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've gone through as well. Like, I bought Amanda Kingsmith is a really rare name, so I bought the domain for AmandaKingsmith.com like a couple years ago, and then I started like a travel blog with it, and then I kind of realized that that actually wasn't what I wanted to be doing. And like, my boyfriend and I started a travel podcast. So then we're like, okay, we can't use AmandaKingsmith.com for this travel podcast that's going to be like us co-hosting. And then I was like, I also want to have something different for MBOM. And now it's like AmandaKingsmith.com is kind of just this place where it's like, this is everything I do. And if you want something specific, here's like how you get there.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's such a good way of separating it out. I know, I think you also spoke with Laura Fraser. And she does a really good job of this too. I'll have to let her know that I'm sharing this, but she does a really good job with a personal website. Like, she does hand lettering and she's a yoga teacher and she does like a yoga marketing blog. And she does a really good job of having like her hub, like her Laura Fraser, I think it's .ca or something. I'll have to look, but that's like her hub. And then it's like my projects, and that's where they can link out. She also has like a podcast. Like, she does a lot of different things, and this is where people can like find her and then decide which route they want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember coming across her website and being like, wow, it's so well organized. Like, hers is definitely more organized than mine is. And it's really cool to like talk to other people who are multi-passionate, because it's something that I've been like, okay, is it like a blessing or a curse? Because it'd be like way easier if I just liked one thing instead of like a bunch of different things.
Yeah, completely. I've actually had like, I've had business mentors like tell me, do you think you need to choose? Like, do you think you should choose one or the other? Like, is this confusing for you? Is this confusing? And I was like, I'm not ready to make that. Like, I still really love and am passionate about my design and my creativity and the ability to connect through that, through my design company. And I'm still really passionate about yoga and teaching yoga and supporting yoga teachers. And so like, I don't think I need to make that decision.
Yeah. And I don't think that anybody should like feel like they need to make that decision if it's not right for them at this time. Something that I love about what you've done with your brand is how it's very clear on like both of your websites, how people can find you and how you're the same person doing two different things. And I feel like that's something that is good for like, if say if somebody's at a dinner party and somebody's like, oh yeah, I'm launching this business and yeah, I'm a yoga teacher and I really need help with it, but I just don't know who to reach out to. And maybe that person is in a different industry, but they've worked with you. And all of a sudden their memory is jogged by like, oh, right, she also has this yoga brand business. Like, I'll connect you with her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been helpful in like finding, it's been really helpful in finding an audience. I'll say like, it's been really like easy to, I mean, yoga teachers, like, yeah, like you just said, the scenario you just said, like, especially yoga teachers or studios or things like that. When they connect with me as a designer and then they realize I also am a yoga teacher, it's like the safety net of like, oh, she gets it. Like, this is good. So it's like an element of connection with my audience. It gives me, it's definitely given me, like I said, that different dimension, that other, like another point of connection. That's a bit deeper than just a superficial connection with an audience.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Do you think in terms of branding with two different elements, it's important to keep your branding kind of similar?
I think it depends on what your intention is. Like I think if you're too, the way you're working with people is sort of overlapping, then I think having an element of consistency the, and again, if it's all coming back to you and you're like that tree trunk and these are all your branches, then I think like having elements of consistency is a really strong way of bringing the connection back to you as the face behind these things. And that might mean like I've chosen to do that through like a logo for my yoyogabrand.com and Function Creatives. Like those two logos are very similar. And like I said, the platforms I'm using, I haven't chosen to go out and take on a whole bunch of different social media, but, you might do that through colors or font choices, like having some, bringing some consistency down to the visuals is really a powerful way of connecting it all back to you. And then language too, like the language and the tones and things that I use to speak to my audiences are pretty similar. Like obviously in my yoga teacher world, in my yoga world, the language I use is maybe a bit different than anyone, than the way I would, or the words I would use in my design audience. But overall, the tone and the approach that I take to language and communicating with my audiences is similar. Like I've got a pretty casual way of communicating with my audience. And even as a yoga teacher, I have a pretty casual way of approaching that kind of audience and that kind of language. So yeah, I think like bringing consistency in through those areas is helpful in tying it all back to you as a brand.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what sort of business lessons you've learned over the last couple of years as you've been doing both like yoga branding as well as yoga teaching.
Mm-hmm. One of the initial, like one of the best pieces of advice I got initially when starting all of this was to just do one thing a day. This was also to, especially for those who are like side hustling like crazy right now, who have, you know, full-time jobs doing something else, but they're really trying to build up this side gig that they want to eventually take full-time or whatever that looks like for you. Is do one thing a day to work on your business, not in your business. So do one thing a day during your working days that might take you, you know, 10 minutes, even if it's just 10 minutes. That's something that's progressing or building or growing your business, not necessarily, you know, standing up in front of a group of students teaching. That will be considered working like in your business. Whereas working on your business might be, you know, starting to write that blog post that you wanted to write or making those updates to your website or sending out an email to, you know, ask an HR company if they're willing to let you come in and teach a yoga class for their colleagues. Like do one thing that would progress you.
Cool. That's a great piece of advice, especially if you're like a yoga entrepreneur, because you often don't have that much structure in your day. And that is like one of the most beautiful things about being an entrepreneur, but it's also one of the most challenging things about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing, kind of as a follow up to that piece of advice that I've started to do in my business that has helped me, because I've been, I would say like the end of summer, beginning of fall, I was completely overwhelmed with working in my business. I was kind of really head down in client work, really head down in, you know, in teaching. And like, I just was like almost on autopilot of just getting my work done. And I was like, oh, come, you know, December, it'll be quiet, and January, and that's when I'll work on my business. And I realized very quickly that it didn't, which is great, not a complaint, but it didn't slow down. And so I started implementing what I call boss dates. And every, I've chosen Monday afternoons. So every Monday afternoon for a few hours, I literally like protect that time. I put boundaries around it, and I'm like, this is the time that I want to work on my business. So I've got, you know, some things I need to get done. And this is going to be the time when I do that. So it's similar to like the one thing a day, but I've just kind of clumped it all together on one day. But if you're in kind of the grind of like working full time, maybe you're trying to raise a family, maybe you've got, you know, another job, and you're trying to just find or carve out, even like I said, like that 10 minutes a day to do something productive to work on your business.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear like the differentiation between on your business versus in your business. And it definitely makes sense, because I think it's important, obviously, to be like teaching if that's what you want to do, and to be like working on that element of your business. But then it's also, you know, that's just one aspect of it, is the actual teaching component and everything that comes with it. And then there's all this other stuff that it's really easy to neglect too, if it's not your thing.
Yeah. It's our businesses and putting our business tasks is always the first thing to go on the back burner, at least for me too. Like, it's like that blog post, to write that blog post or to update my website or to update my portfolio or to reach out to a yoga teacher collaborator that I've been wanting to do a workshop with. Like, that all, that stuff all gets pushed to the back burner when I'm working too hard in my business. Like, when I'm head down, actually just kind of getting the tasks of my day to day done.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, writing blog posts, it's weird because I love writing, but then when it's like, I should write a blog post, I'm like, but I've got all these other things I could do.
Yeah, immediately when you put like the pressure on it to be like that, it's just like, yeah, it changes something. But it is, there are these like important things to help us run our businesses. You know, some of that even might be like, I set aside time on Fridays to do my accounting, which is like, well, not my thing. Like, it's not something I love doing, but yeah, it's just, it's something that has to get done. And I have to, that's my working on, you know, in my business or on my business, like just checking out my finances and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've tried to implement some structures like that as well. I feel like it's the most helpful when it's like, if you've got these like things that you have to do, so say it's teaching or maybe it's times when you're on calls with other people where like somebody else is depending on you for something. But then for all the other time, especially if you work from home, it's like people have no idea if you're just like on Instagram or Facebook or if you're like actually writing that blog post.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any other pieces of advice that you want to share with listeners?
I think just going back to even what I said, I think at the start, it's just like simplify. Just don't, I definitely, when I was starting, like I got caught up in just trying to do everything on my own all at once. Like, and that's just, it's okay to like give yourself patience and be patient with yourself and give yourself time to sort these things out. And if you're doing that like one thing a day, then you're doing a lot more than a lot of people are doing. So just simplify, be easy on yourself and don't overcomplicate your process. Take people's advice with what resonates with you and just let go of the rest.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. That made me think of, have you seen the Tony Robbins documentary, like I'm Not Your Guru?
I haven't. Yeah, it's on my list. Like, you know, on Netflix, you can make my list. It's on my list. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And something that struck me that he was talking about that really resonated with me is he talks about how it's really easy to look back on like 1 year of your life. So say reflecting 2016 and thinking about, you know, the stuff you did do, but then also thinking about all the stuff you didn't do, thinking about how much time you wasted doing, you know, whatever you do to waste time. But then if you consider like 5 or 10 years of your life, you can look back on that and you'll see that you actually did so much in that time. And there's kind of this like unique kind of strange way that we consider time.
Yeah, completely. And I do like a live chat with my yoga teacher community once a month. And yesterday we did one on like reviewing 2016 and planning for 2017. And that was one thing I talked about, was like, on one hand, we're like, holy moly, like, I can't believe how fast that year just went by. But on the other side of the coin, you're like, I got a lot of stuff done. Like, I actually do have, like, a lot happened in 2016. So on one hand, it went by really fast. On the other hand, it went by like, so much happened. So it's just, it's interesting how we perceive, like, our accomplishments and what happened in a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It is really neat. It made me kind of like step back and like look at what I've done in the last year, the last 3 years, a little bit differently from how I was just like focusing on the things that I maybe didn't get done. And I was like, wow, I actually did a lot of stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. We completely focus on the things we didn't do or the things we didn't get done or what we didn't check off, but we forget about all the other stuff that actually did happen and what we accomplished. So yeah, that's what we started our live chat as yesterday, was what did we accomplish? What are we proud of? Like, let's start there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love that. That's such a good way to kind of like close off this year. I'm curious where people can go to find out more about you.
Yeah. So I'm over at youryogabrand.com. That's the yoga teacher community. And I also have the Facebook community, which is called Build Your Brand, a yoga teacher's community. And that is where all of the Facebook kind of community of my teachers are hanging out, where we have kind of like daily discussions that we partake in. And like I said, there's live chats once a month. And everyone's just really supportive and amazing at, we're all kind of on this journey together and we're all kind of figuring things out as we go. And it's really supportive. So those are the best places for my yoga teachers to find me. And then my design company is over at hellofunction.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today, Danielle. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I think we covered lots of kind of juicy little tidbits, so I'm excited to get people to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. All right. I hope you all enjoyed that interview with Danielle Joseph and you're feeling inspired to go out and create or change or modify your brand in some way. Hopefully you learned something insightful from the podcast episode. And to learn more from the show notes, you can visit www.mbomyoga.com. You can sign up for the newsletter there and as well join the community on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga if you've been enjoying the podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening and namaste.